Breaking news, this is your World War III update, the critical information in the last 24 hours that you need to know as it pertains to geopolitical turmoil ensuing around the world, hurtling us inexorably towards nuclear Armageddon. Now, Melanie Joly, Canada's foreign minister, has advised any Canadian currently still in Lebanon, the 45,000 that still remain, that they need to get out while commercial flights are available. Now, 7.5 months ago, I believe she sent out a similar tweet. This one is far more explicit, ominous, and definitive in terms of what it is implying. It's implying that a war is imminent, especially with this final statement, while commercial flights are still available. That is very critical. They're currently in the process of planning militarily how they're going to extricate Canadian nationals when the time finally comes. But yes, I would advise people that if you don't have a dog in that fight, you might as well pack your shit and come home before, because it's going to go down. You can tell the way that Yoav Gallant, the Israeli defense minister, was grinning from ear to ear as he met with Anthony Blinken in the United States today. That is the kind of grin from somebody who has been plagued by anxiety over what to do and when to do it, and has finally made a very bad decision. You see this in people stricken with mental health issues who are on the brink of self-deletion when they finally made that bad choice to finally pull the trigger and self-delete. There's this pink cloud sense of happiness that precedes that because they've made a decision, because there's no longer any, their depression is cured by their decision to self-delete. And this is a perfect analogy, because I don't know if the Israelis truly understand what they're getting themselves into. I think their leaders are not being honest about the potential for this thing to go very badly. You can see by the alacrity of these Israeli Channel 12 reporters as they're detailing going over a warehouse, because Israel right now is warehousing all kinds of emergency supplies and provisions for the coming war. And they're doing this with such a cheerful, naive alacrity. It's not what you'd expect from a country who is supposedly accustomed to war and accustomed to the horrors of being right next to war. And of course, they have far more experience in this type of thing than we do over here. But I think many people in the high-rise buildings in Tel Aviv are insulated from the horrors of war. I mean, imagine a grid-down situation when hundreds of thousands of asymmetrical attacks are descending upon you at once, and you have no power. And within 3 days, when your emergency rations that the government provides runs out, what are you going to do then? That's when things are going to get ugly. And I suspect that this thing is going to get way, way out of control, because they don't plan on just stopping at Lebanon. This is going to be a war which completely entangles the Middle East, which will entangle the planet. We also have manpower shortages with Israel. The Israeli Knesset is approving a first reading about the extension of the reserve service in the army. They're going to extend the age in which conscripts can be retained in the army, because of course, Israel is a small country. It's so small that they have to bring in foreign workers to make up for the loss of manpower by conscripting all these guys to go and fight the war against Hamas and Hezbollah. And now, one thing to their benefit in fighting against Hezbollah, they do have a lot of guys now who have a little bit more experience. So I think this whole Hamas operation for them was more of a training operation. What is really going to make the difference here is the U.S. military. That's going to be who picks up the slack. That is the whole rub. That's why he's smiling from ear to ear. I mean, think about what's going on there right now. The potential for a war that is going to likely cause attacks on Israel, the likes of which they've never seen before. You're going to see the overwhelming of the Iron Dome. You're going to see the targeting of strategic assets, the shutdown of various critical infrastructure. And look at the smile on these guys' face. I mean, that's a deep smile. I can't get over that. I mean, that's a smile of, that's deep contention. This is not something, you know, usually Blinken, a guy ridden with anxiety, it's almost like he's finally made a decision that, you know, he's been wanting to just, okay, we just got to get this over with. We've made the decision. They're going to war. It's just a matter of time. And now they're so desperate that they're saying that ultra-Orthodox practitioners of the Jewish faith are also going to be conscripted. I believe this amounts to, and forgive me if I'm wrong here with my numbers, but I think it's like 600,000 people identify as ultra-Orthodox. So now even they have to get drafted. And of course, up until this point, they've been immune from the draft. They've just been allowed to pray. They don't have to do any sort of civil service. I don't even think they work. A lot of them don't even work, at least work as we define it here in the West. So this is going to create a lot of division. And I don't know why it is that they would do something like this, to be honest. Maybe I don't know the politics of that. Maybe there's a lot of people who think they should be pulling their weight a little bit more. We have Norway switching gears here. We'll probably talk a little bit more about Israel in just a minute. But Norway is starting to stockpile grain, citing the pandemic, war, and climate change. Now, indeed, all of these things have the potential to be real threats. Pandemics do happen. There are deadly viruses and pathogens that kill lots of people, and they can spread. War, they sandwich right in the middle because, of course, that's the one they want people's eyes to glaze over as if it's low probability. And, of course, climate change, which, like everything, is greenwashed and, unfortunately, is fouled by the profit motive. But as I always say, just because your insurance company is charging you money and you think it's bullshit doesn't mean that your house is never going to burn down, doesn't mean that bad things aren't going to happen, and doesn't mean that those things aren't real when they happen, okay? There's a profit motive that goes along with all this stuff. So is there green profiteering? Absolutely. Is there profiteering off the pandemic? Absolutely. We all know what Moderna stock is doing right now in anticipation of the bird flu outbreak. Apparently, just a sidebar here, I think the first bird flu jabs have been rolled out in a country. I can't remember which one it was. Anyways, the whole point with this article and the titling of it is that war is in the middle. In marketing and social psychology, they know that you're most likely to remember the first and last of anything. That's why a lot of commercials will be high front end and high rear end. And all the stuff in the middle is kind of like a story or fluff because they know you're going to remember. So that means if you have bad news to give somebody, you want to sandwich it in the middle of a long-winded, sandwich it in the middle of good news. So you start off the letdown letter with good news. Hey, we really liked you at the company, but we're going to have to fire you. But, you know, we think that you have good potential somewhere else, something like that. Anyways, so that's why they frame it like this. But most importantly, Norway is stockpiling grain. Their goal is to have 90,000 tons of grain stored by, they say, 2029. They always push these dates off into the future to alleviate anxiety because there's some kind of rule. Like, they know that if you say something is within a year, people get kind of nervous. If you say 2 years, they're still nervous. 3, 4, okay, then that's, you know, people still think we have forever, right? Now, they're stockpiling grain, and I should add, this is also the country who is currently putting nuclear-capable F-35 bombers into Soviet-era, Cold War-era, I should say, bunkers in the mountains in Norway. They also are the country who has the Svalbard Seed Vault, which, of course, is a warehouse for over a million different strains of food. So Norway is prepping, and this is just but one of many countries that are doing the same thing. All countries are suddenly becoming preppers. What a surprise. Where should we go next here? I just want to make sure that we clean up all the Israeli stuff. So Donald Trump is saying that he wants to try to mediate this Iranian issue, and that it's important that Iran doesn't have nuclear weapons, but don't worry because we're not going to start a war with Iran. We just want to make sure they don't have nukes. Well, the problem is that he backed out of the nuclear deal, and he also killed their top general, Soleimani. And the Iranians still have a chip on their shoulder about that, which is why they still have an arrest warrant out for Donald Trump. So, of course, he's going to play down the prospect of going to war with Iran. No politician is going to run on the platform of we need to go to war with said country, especially in this sensitive geopolitical climate. So, but you can bet that he'll definitely go to war with Iran. He's there to carry the torch for what is currently being fomented. And you can see with Netanyahu that Trump is definitely the choice. If Netanyahu had to pick one person, it would most certainly be Donald Trump right now. Now, but all of them are bad. I mean, you really have dementia, narcissism, or steroids with the, what's his name? The other Kennedy? The Kennedy? The guy who's on the juice, whose head looks like it's going to bulge out of his head. Eyes looking like they're going to bulge out of his head. Okay, so what else do we got? This is very important. The Biden administration moves towards allowing American military contractors to deploy in Ukraine. So this is the equivalent of like a Blackwater or the Wagner Group, right? And this is why the Russians use the Wagner Group, because it's a bit of a cop-out from taking national responsibility for a war that's being waged. So the United States has already been doing this in a de facto state. They've already been sending mercenaries there, but now they want to make it de jure. That is the next rung of the escalation ladder, sending mercenaries there. Now they're saying it's just to do maintenance on weapon systems. I mean, really think about that. You seriously think that these guys are going to go there and they're just going to do some Mr. Fix-It stuff, and they're not going to be giving people advice and helping them with targeting and helping them use the systems to kill Russians? I mean, you just can't separate those things. I mean, unless you have a very strict, you know, protocol in terms of the boundaries of the role that are clearly defined beforehand, you're not going to have that. So that's what's going on. They're going to start sending the mercenaries overtly, which is the same when you really think about it as sending troops. It's just they're not in the same uniforms. And the reason why they're doing this, there are rumors that the Ukrainian front lines are in fact collapsing. And people are saying, well, this is great. You have one of the Chechen generals saying that the war is going to be over by the end of the year. But he's, of course, only talking about the Ukrainian military. Now, I don't particularly believe that. I think he is just being overly optimistic and telling his soldiers what they want to hear. But the thing to understand is that as soon as the Ukrainian army folds, NATO is going to come in and fill the role. And what they're trying to do right now is create that balance so that it really seems like, you know, the intention never really is for Ukraine to be able to push the Russians out, because they know that would mean nuclear Armageddon. So it's just to keep the war in a stasis, and they will supplement the dwindling, diminishing Ukrainian military by giving them more powerful weapons as the zero day approaches to keep the Russians at bay. And invariably, they're going to start putting troops in there as well, first as mercenaries, and then eventually, cats are out of the bags, and then it's off to the races. Now, this is an interesting story, okay? We're going to listen to a little bit of this. This guy looks like Indian version of Andrew Tate. He's actually interviewing a British MP. I can't remember what his name is. British Member of Parliament. But the reason why this is important is because I'll just give you a little bit of the backstory before I jump into this here. For the first time since March of 2023, Lloyd Austin has communicated with the Russian Minister of Defense. Now, at the time, it was Sergei Shoigu, if you recall. And back in late 2022, there was a nuclear dirty bomb scare with the Russians. And Sergei Shoigu made calls to all his NATO counterparts and said, look, we know that you guys are planning on enabling Ukraine to utilize a nuclear dirty bomb, and we need you to put the brakes on that, or else we're going to take this to nuclear Armageddon. Of course, later it turned out that indeed at that time, there was a very heightened state of nuclear risk. This came out, I think, a couple months ago in some declassified documents that were released. So we know that, around the time of the Nord Stream, 3 months after Nord Stream, that was a very critical time where there was talks, back channel communications, and for all we know it, we were in a very high state of DEFCON at that point. Now the same thing appears to be occurring, because just in the last 24 hours, Andrei Belousov has contacted Lloyd Austin, and they're talking about what's happening right now in nuclear de-escalation channels. This could be the result of what's happened in Sevastopol, the numerous attacks on the civilian populations that have happened in Dagestan and Sevastopol and Belgorod, attacks on oil refineries, attacks on Russian nuclear radars, other strategic facilities, warships, targets in Crimea, using ATACMS missiles that are guided by these RQ-4 Global Hawk ISR gathering drones in the Black Sea. And it could actually be something pertaining to a supposed shadow war that is currently ongoing, because the Russians, or at least a Russian-affiliated Telegram channel, tweeted out or telegrammed out yesterday that they had successfully shot down an RQ-4 Global Hawk over the Black Sea with a MiG-31 fighter jet. Now, U.S. officials deny this, and the Russian MOD says they have no information about it, which is not a denial, I should add. But I would not be surprised if there isn't some sort of shadow war happening outside the public view, and that this is why there's that line of communication now, because we are approaching a point where there could be a direct clash with NATO and Russia. So very interesting that they are currently communicating. I do think it might have something to do with this nuclear dirty bomb story. However, this British MP who is being interviewed here is stating that he believes that the Russians or the Ukrainians, he doesn't really specify who, that a nuclear dirty bomb is going to be used. If you don't know what that is, essentially you have fissionable materials that are paired with a conventional ordnance. It explodes, it irradiates an area, very toxic, very difficult to clean up, okay? And it's going to be a radiological incident that's going to make certain places uninhabitable and impassable. And this is how you can use something like this strategically, even more so, in fact, than a nuclear detonation where the fallout will eventually dissipate. With this, you actually have, you know, permanent contamination, semi-permanent contamination of the soil. So if you wanted to prevent somebody from going anywhere, you detonate a dirty bomb. It would have a very similar effect as the dam that got blown, the Kakhovka Dam that blew and basically prevented Ukraine from doing an offensive in that direction. Okay. So, but this is important because, well, I'll just let him say what he has to say here.
Well, Putin said that he will use nuclear weapons if Russia is threatened. So is there actually a way of winning any war against Russia?
Well, if he has nuclear, no one's winning, are they? Yes, I think he would. I've got defence analysts feeding me information, and they're in, you know, services, and they're saying that there is going to be a nuclear detonation.
They're in, you know, intelligence services, I think is what he meant.
They're saying that there is going to be a nuclear detonation in Europe.
Who by?
Well, it could be a dirty bomb. I mean, there's a lot of nuclear material floating around in Ukraine from their nuclear reactors. I mean, to create contamination, all you need is some conventional explosives and some nuclear material, and you've got a dirty bomb. They may have already been set off in the Donbass area now.
And that could be the false flag that starts the war?
Yeah.
Okay, so he just sort of passingly said that they may have already been set off in the Donbass area, which is incredibly important. I mean, that's a point that the interviewer just sort of glazed over. Maybe he didn't hear him properly. But if that is true, that means that there are radiologically contaminated sites already within the Donbass, and this may be, for all we know, what is making certain regions impassable, but you think the Russians would call attention to something like this?
There's many ways it can be done.
Like 9/11.
Like 9/11. And the other reasons for having general elections is that, you know, Rishi's maintained that he's got inflation down to 2.3% and his plan's working. Well, if it was really working, he'd be waiting till the autumn to demonstrate it's working more. The fact is, he knows that food price inflation is going to rocket by the end of the summer. And that's going to be no relief on interest rates whatsoever. So this is as good as it gets for him on the economy. He's got to have an election by January next year, so there's no respite from the high interest rates. And the other thing is, of course, the disastrous and ineffective Rwanda bill for dealing with the elite.
He gets into a little bit more specifics there. But, you know, his comments on the nuclear dirty bomb should not be underestimated because, of course, Ukraine has access to a lot of fissionable materials. These could be smuggled in. I think it's tightly controlled. And in fact, you are able to trace where it comes from. I do believe we're going to have a nuclear scientist on the channel very soon. And I'm going to ask him about this. But I believe that you're able to actually trace the where the fissionable material came from on the basis of its composition. So if they were to use something like that, they would almost have to get it from a Russian facility if they wanted to blame it on the Russians. So either way, there's a potential for this thing to go very sideways, very quickly. And that is why right now you're having these conversations with ministers of defense of the respective countries. Now, I should add that this website, RIA Novosti, full disclaimer, has been banned in some European countries, much like Russia Today has been banned in many countries. In fact, Russia Today has been banned off YouTube. Now, Russia has retaliated, and they've banned 81 European media sites. This just happened today. So every day, we're just one step closer. The Iron Curtain gets thicker and thicker. The divide between East and West only continues to grow by the day. And what always seems to be good news actually never is good news. Because when the Pentagon chief for the first time is talking to the Russian defense minister to discuss open lines of communication, this is Reuters. That sounds great, right? But when you really think about what does that mean, you got to really read between the lines here. Why are they talking now while tensions are, you know, sky high? Well, we may potentially have just had a shootdown of an American $130 million spy plane. I mean, that plane probably, arguably, should have been shot down a long time ago. From the Russian point of view, they were justified in doing so because, of course, it's been used to kill Russians and to take back territory that Russia believes is theirs, and now it's even being used to target inside Russia proper. The fact that they're trying to open lines of communication, what they're talking about is red lines of communication. They're talking about de-escalation channels if this thing goes to the DEFCON 2 and above level. Because, of course, you need those lines of communication. They need to be imminent. They need to be, you know, basically 24/7 hotlines that you call, somebody picks up immediately. Because when it's a matter of minutes, possibly seconds, with hypersonics in Europe, we're talking about things could go out of control very, very quickly. So what appears to be good news usually is a sign that things are much, much worse than we're being told, okay? Now, according to the report about the RQ-4B Global Hawk drone, this is actually a Defense Romania website. So this is a very pro-Western website. So I give you guys the pro-Western, I give you guys the pro-Eastern, okay? I'm just trying to figure this stuff out. That's all we try to do here. Now, essentially, they are saying, let me see if I can find my summary of this particular story. I don't know if I have a summary of this particular story. I thought I did. Oh yeah, here we go. Russian pro-war bloggers have claimed since Monday that a MiG-31 fighter jet shot down a Global Hawk reconnaissance drone over the Black Sea. The newspaper said the information was first disseminated by the Fighter Bomber Telegram channel, which has ties to Russian aerospace forces. Again, these guys are not going to say anything that could potentially bring us to the brink of nuclear Armageddon if there wasn't some credibility to it, or if they weren't green light to say that thing. Because, of course, you know, violations for disclosing things you're not supposed to, classified information, I'm sure is punishable, and I'm sure the punishment is very strict in Russia. Late Monday, the channel appeared to suggest that something had been shot down over the Black Sea. Newsweek has not yet been able to verify the claim and has reached out to the U.S. Department of Defense and the Russian Foreign Ministry for a response. A U.S. military official says no incident has been reported over the Black Sea. Now, the fog of war is thick. If it is the case that a RQ-4 Global Hawk was brought down, you have to ask yourself, would the Americans admit it? Do the Americans want a war right now when they're dealing with Israel? Or would they call up the Russian Minister of Defense and try to open a de-escalation hotline? Would they want to admit that? Because, of course, right when they admit that, they're going to have to also accept that there's a response. Now, the plane that was utilized in the Sevastopol attacks was flying with its transponder off. So if one of these planes had its transponder off and it was brought down, really nobody would ever know, except, of course, the people who are piloting it and the people who are in the know, who are, you know, obviously have to keep that information classified, right? So it might come out in a future WikiLeaks, now that Assange is out, that it's just so happened that there, in fact, was a shoot down. We know that these types of close calls happen all the time, and they're later declassified. They've happened several times in this conflict before. I remember there was one instance where a Russian fighter jet had locked on to a, and I think they might have even fired on a British surveillance aircraft, but it missed or something like that. So this only comes out later on. So you can only imagine that these de-escalation hotlines, it's in the best interest of both sides to manage public panic. When you really think about nuclear war, it is a war between the guys who are going to be hiding in the very deep and sophisticated bunkers who are going to survive it afterwards. The public doesn't need to know on either side. The Russians have no vested interest in letting the American public know that nuclear war is imminent as much as they do their own population, you see? Because, of course, then their population is going to figure it out, then their population is going to panic. So both leadership classes, the executive branches on both sides, have a vested interest in keeping the real shadow war quiet. And that is the scary part about all of this, is that we're never really going to know. According to the Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov, he told reporters that, to be honest, I don't have that kind of information that I can speak on that matter. So the fact that he didn't really deny it outright, right, he kind of left it open-ended, means that there could potentially be some credibility to this. There definitely could be some credibility. Now, of course, when the first one happened, there was some media reporting on it. Not a lot, not as much as you would think, considering it was the first real casualty of the conflict by NATO forces, even though it was just an autonomous drone. But you'd think that they, you know, they would only publicize it if it was some way instrumental, like if they wanted to ramp up the war effort, then they would do so. I think that the fact that they're not reporting it means that it's very serious, okay? The Russians have said that they will have their retribution for the attacks that have recently been conducted against them. But, you know, we're just getting to this point where literally any hour now, crazy shit could just start happening and not stop happening. In fact, I mean, it's been happening up until this point. We now have, this is War News 24/7, a great website, by the way, very neutral Greek perspective, very good analysis, and very realistic in their appraisal of the situation. And we talked about this a couple days ago, 30 B-52 nuclear bombers, now nuclear, are going to be re-equipped with nuclear weapons. So the U.S. is rearming. Nuclear proliferation is in full swing. Once again, I believe spending on nuclear weapons has increased by 13%. So this is a real threat, okay? This guy right here, this is the guy, Igor Krigalov, I believe is his name. He was the one who is saying that they have evidence to suggest that they're going to be utilizing dirty bombs. So Lieutenant General Igor Krulov, in charge of CBRN defense, said that substances from a dirty nuclear bomb can be created are currently being imported into Ukraine via Poland and Romania. Now, the question would be, why would they import it from Poland and Romania? That would be a very interesting question to ask, right? Perhaps it's because maybe there's a concern that Ukraine would be investigated, and then you could if they did have their, you know, if the International Atomic Energy Agency came in there and wanted to investigate whether or not the fissionable materials matched what was in Ukraine, they could come in and do that investigation in Ukraine, but there wouldn't necessarily be a cause for them to go into one of these surrounding countries. I don't know. And again, this could just be bullshit Russian propaganda. I know people are going to immediately write it off as such, but that's very dismissive. And quite frankly, at this stage in the game, knowing how much our leaders lie, that's very ignorant and naive. So these are the same guys who are saying that they're weaponizing all sorts of biological agents. Currently, biolabs being built now in Africa as well. Of course, we have monkeypox outbreaks that the WHO is sounding the alarm on, bird flu, this, that, and whatever. So he is saying that nuclear dirty bombs are being imported. The import of these materials is personally supervised by the head of the office of the president of Ukraine, Adny Yermak. So pretty bold accusations on the part of Lieutenant General Igor Kirillov, who's in charge of Russia's essentially CBRN, chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear program. Crazy times. Doomsday conversion planes, ex-Korean Boeing 747-8s are going to be converted into doomsday planes. So they're building more doomsday planes. There it is. It's going to be the new doomsday planes for the purpose of command and control after shit hits the fan. This is a tweet by an individual, as suspected, Hans Christensen. Deployment of E-6B TACAMO nuclear command and control and communication aircraft to Norway. Norway, once again, the guys who are stockpiling grain, putting F-35s in bunkers and have the Svalbard seed vault. Indicated forward operations with nuclear missile submarines. What I did not expect was one of them to be surfacing off of Norway in a blunt signal to Russia. So, you know, here you have it, the forward deployment of nuclear submarines at the same time when the Russians are off the coast of the United States. This is the Chechen general who is claiming that the war is going to be over by the end of the year. But reality check, if that is true, those troops are just going to be replaced by NATO. Which time do we got left here? Not much. Okay, so this puts it in perspective how dependent we are on Taiwan. Considering that all of the big tech giants, Apple, Google, what are the other ones? I mean, you know, pretty much anybody in tech, okay, Facebook or whatever it's called, Meta, all of them rely on chips. 60% of all the chips are made at the TSMC, the Taiwan Chip Manufacturing Company. And 60% of those, that's what fuels basically the big tech. So if Taiwan goes, pretty much the entire totalitarian control apparatus that they've created goes with it. So of course, they have to be very careful, but this is why they want to protect it. But of course, in their attempts to want to protect it, they run the risk of starting a war. I just thought that was an interesting fact that literally the majority of the business model, because of course they all require these servers and you know, they require computing power and chips, big tech. Without Taiwan, they can't do that. And so that's why, you know, so much, we live in such an interconnected, globalized world. There's a ripple effect with everything. This is credit card interest rates above 20%. Look at that, 21.47%. I don't know what it was in the 80s. I'm sure it was probably even worse than that. But that is pretty crazy, man. I feel really sorry for people who are taking on loads of credit card debt at this point in time. According to the State Department, Lebanon is still a level 3 risk, not quite a level 4 yet. Once this turns red, that's when it's going to happen. Now, I am surprised that Canada has turned it red, but the United States hasn't. And I think it has something to do with the fact that the U.S. doesn't want to rock the boat at this point in time, because they know once the U.S. issues the travel advisory to not go, as they have with Syria, Iraq, Iran, and every other country that is currently in red, Libya, Sudan, Mali, Ukraine, Belarus, Burma, all of these places, you know, once you turn this square red, and in light of all of the brinkmanship happening on the border here and the actual conflict back and forth, that's when people are going to start to panic, and that's when public opinion might start to shift. So if it's true that a war is about to start, then the United States is going to have to answer as to why they did not warn people ahead of time, right? Because Canada has, numerous other countries have as well. So it's not looking good. All right, guys, I think I'm going to conclude the video there. I got a bunch of work I got to get to on the farm as per usual as of late. It's a busy life, but we got to enjoy these days while we have them, these days of relative peace and calm. Canada inflation is up 2.9% in May. It was projected to be 2.6. So that's a very, you know, serious increase that was unexpected. And they cut rates recently. So this probably is going to be a sign for the U.S. economy and any other economies who are paying attention. If they cut rates too soon, this is the exact same thing that's going to happen. Now, it could likely have something to do with oil prices, because, of course, they always underestimate or underreport the importance of oil prices when trying to factor inflation. But all the more reason to keep on prepping and keep on getting better in life. The better you are before SHTF, the better off you're going to be afterwards. Thanks for watching, folks. Take care. Canadian Prepper out.